Well, hello once again. It is Pod Sothoth, a Lovecraft book club with me, your host, Todd Beardsley, also narrator in half of the episodes. But on the other half, I'm joined by my lovely attorney and wife and co-founder of Huge Success LLC, Claire Reynolds. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
I'm great. So we are here today to talk about The Descendant. What will it be like when I get... knew that it would surprise you that it was merely a story fragment.
Is it ever just a story fragment? Yeah.
So that's... very similar to the book. It was written at some point. Sources say 1926.
Similar to what book?
The Book by H.P. Lovecraft. Which we talked about, my love.
Have we? listeners, this happens quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
By the way, if you've not noticed, Todd would be like, "Remember when we did that?"
Yeah, it was sure, episode 19 and episode 20 on this very podcast. Well, we covered The Book.
If it was more than 2 weeks ago.
It was.
I don't remember.
I'm the one suffering from amnesia.
This is the same writing versus publishing. It was written in and around 1926. Nobody's super, super sure. But it was published in the 1938 issue of Leaves. And it was published in the same issue as The Book. Now, one thing about Leaves, this very short-lived journal, it was published by one R.H. Barrow, who was the executor of Lovecraft's literary estate. And that's how I got a hold of this thing.
Okay.
Barrow went on to donate all, I think, of Lovecraft's original manuscripts to Brown. They have a lovely scan of this, just as they do the book. So if you listen to episode 20, where I urged you to go to Brown University's digital archive to go look at the original, same deal here. So that's the publishing story of The Descendant. So let's get into it. It is a fragment. It doesn't really have an ending. It just kind of has
a beginning or a middle.
Or, well, it's got a couple beginnings, I would argue. But yeah, do you want to talk about anything else, or you just want to get into the story and do the other stuff later?
Okay. No, let's just All right. get into it. Wait, there's other stuff?
Yeah, I got a ton of other
stuff.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, yeah, so no.
Stay tuned, listener. Yeah. Exciting news.
We gotta have something for people to look forward to after this bit of nothingness.
It's not nothing. It's great. I have a lot of notes even on the very story itself.
I just kept picturing Ernest Hemingway like punching H.P. Lovecraft in the face.
Definitely would have. Why? Why would he punch him in the face? Over this?
It's just a bunch of words.
Yeah, there's not a lot of economy here. It's more of an exercise than anything. Here's what I like about it. Should we go? No, we're going to go into it, okay? And I'm going to point out the things I like about it along the way.
All right, got it.
I have prepared for a change because it's so short. A paragraph by paragraph summary.
Okay.
First off, I think the beginning is amazing. There's a man who screams. I don't remember exactly what
it is. Who screams when the church bells ring?
Yeah.
When doves
cry. In London, there's a man who screams when doves cry. And it is. Such a good start. It's a great start.
Okay, it is.
It doesn't pay
That's
off.
That's the only line in this story that I found to be intriguing. I was like,
"How dare you?
Let's wait. Why are we moving on from this?" I'm like, "Why does he scream when the church bells ring every hour? Every hour?
Every 15 minutes, probably.
Every 15 minutes? Yeah. And how does he scream? Is it just like, or like, is it screaming in terror? How long does the scream go on?
He lives alone with a street cat in Gray's Inn.
Street cat? You sounded like Christopher Walken.
Street cat in Gray's Inn. And when I read these stories, especially the short ones, I try to dig into like every detail, like especially geographic details or names of places, all that stuff. So I looked it up. I said, where's Gray's Inn in London? And it's a place.
Oh.
But it's not really a place that one might live for 10 years. I'm going to hit you with this. Are you aware of the Inns of Court?
Yes.
Okay. Gray's Inn is one of the four Inns of Court. That's the real Gray's Inn.
Okay.
And... explain if you're aware.
Do not put me on the spot like that.
All right, well, because I just looked it up. And so the Inns of Court in, I guess England. I don't think it's like just London, and I don't think it's all of UK, but I think it's just England, where if you're going to practice law, you have to be a member of one of four inns. And I guess they're like the four houses of Hogwarts. There's house contracts, house torts,
house criminal law,
house crim. and house, I don't know, Magna Carta law is probably what they do instead of common law.
Maritime.
Yeah, maritime law, of course. Yeah, so Gray's Inn is one of four of these inns of court. They're basically just professional associations for lawyers. You have to join one if you're going to be practicing law. It is not the kind of place where you would live for it's not a residential inn.
Right.
And so there's two things here. Like, the charitable read is like, "Oh, he's using the term Gray's Inn to like denote, you know, this character, the screaming man's character, as like someone of, you know, education and aristocracy and of this background that he would be, you know, just as like a hand wave toward." The other read is that Lovecraft thought it was really an inn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he wouldn't be the first person.
He wouldn't be the first, right? Like, Lovecraft, famous Anglophile, famously did not care about the real geography or culture of England.
I mean, it could have just been a name he made up, too.
Could be, but it seems awfully, like, on the nose, because it's everything else, like, seems to take place in Camden, which is a neighborhood in London. Gray's Inn is in Camden.
Oh, okay.
And so, I don't know. I think there was a thing. Anyway, first sentence out of the way. And he lives with a cat, obviously, because it's a Lovecraft character, mm-hmm. So he lives with a cat. And he is known to be mad, right? And nobody knows why. But he spends all his time...
harmlessly mad.
He's harmlessly mad. He spends all his time, like, reading dime novels and shitty literature, right? Mm-hmm. Just, like, garbage literature.
Yeah.
And nobody knows why, right? Except...
Is that the equivalent of, like, watching Fox News?
Probably. Right,
it's like an old man just
He's an old man just reading garbage all the time, and no one would say why, but it had something to do with the dreaded Necronomicon.
Clatu, Barata, necktie.
Thunderclap, and. But he's not the main character. The main character is a guy named Williams. Williams is 23 and he's a dreamer. Baby, he's a loner. He's a rebel. You don't want to get mixed up with a guy like him. And he moved into this presumably boarding house, and next door. And he like felt that there was something weird going on, but that's fine. And he knew about the guy next door. And there's more about the guy next door, right?
And I love how it's like he's forcing him to. Like, he's really forcing himself on this old man.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know. Leave this old guy alone. He just wants to be alone.
I just assume his heart's in the right place, and he's like, yeah, nobody else pays attention to this harmless old madman. I will. I'm going to be his best friend. And he couldn't get anything out of him. He couldn't, like, get to know him. He learned later that he had been to Harrow in Oxford, which is a phrase I've heard before recently, and I don't know where, but I looked it up. And Harrow and Oxford. So we're all familiar with the university at Oxford, very prestigious university, possibly the most prestigious in the world. So Harrow is a public school, which in England means it's only for rich people. And
it's a rich people
boarding school.
Okay.
And it's basically a feeder prep school for Oxford.
Okay.
And so if you're destined for Oxford, you go to Harrow.
Okay.
It's a whole thing, right? And I was looking around. It's like, is there like an American equivalent for Harrow in Oxford? And it's like, everybody on the internet's like, nope, there is not. There's like Exeter to Harvard, kind of.
Yeah.
But like, you don't have to go to Exeter to go to Harvard, and going to Exeter is not an automatic in to Harvard, right? So,
but you're going to go somewhere.
You're going to go somewhere.
If you go to Exeter.
Yeah. So it's rich people school. And then it turns out this madman who lives next door, this harmless madman who only reads Penny Dreadfuls, he is none other than Lord Northam. And so he is the titular descendant. He is descended from royalty,
oh, okay.
And it all. Now we veer hard into
a lot of people. I'm sorry, England, mm-hmm. yep. whatever your monarchy is. I do not get it. Everyone is.
Everyone is descended
from somebody.
Right? Probably. I mean, like, there were fewer people in the 11th century.
Yeah.
And they were all very fecund.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, I don't remember what it was, one of those ancestry.com or somebody, and I could, like, somebody had done the work. Now, is it real? No idea. But it was, like, it traced it back, like, 23 generations or uh-huh. something to some King John or something like that.
Wow.
All of us are. Uh-huh. There were just tons and tons of branches.
Uh-huh. Well, this guy, he is addressed as Lord Northam. He's not only descended of, but holds the title to some barony.
Okay.
Because he's a lord. And
Maybe his first name is just Lord.
Possibly his first name is Lord, but I don't think.
Like Judge Reinhold.
Like Judge Reinhold, yes. Not actually a judge. Was that in Arrested Development, right? Where he's Judge Reinhold?
Yes.
Yeah, in the Dancing Edos, I think. Okay. So he's Lord Northam. He has an ancient hereditary castle in Yorkshire. It has a reputed Roman origin. If this is all ringing any bells, you're right. All of this is lifted straight into Rats in the Walls.
Okay.
So this is the second connection of other Lovecraft works. First connection with the book, second connection with Rats in the Walls. And he even tittered shrilly when the subject of the supposed undercrypts hewn out of the solid crag, the frowns on the North Sea, was brought up. Yes, yes, because we all read Rats in the Walls. Now, here's my reading of it, my modern 100 years later. Mm-hmm. Lovecraft never really intended this to be published.
Right. Yeah.
What if this takes place 5 years, 10 years after the events mm-hmm. of Rats in the Walls?
That's what I'm assuming, yeah.
This is what you're saying. See, I thought it was, like, groundbreaking.
Well, I mean, I guess
it's a sequel.
I wasn't thinking of, I don't know when he wrote this versus when he wrote Rats in the Walls.
So he wrote this in 1926, and Rats in the Walls was 1929, I want to say.
All right.
So
Rats in the Walls is a prequel to whatever he did.
Right, but it was published much later. It was published in 1938. Yeah. So you could read it as a sequel if you wanted to torture this, like, Lovecraft, this coherent Lovecraft universe.
Yeah.
Which you should.
No, I was just saying, I was just reading it thinking, oh, okay, so that's where he ended up.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Oh, but there's a twist. All right. So, okay, so now we know who he is, right? And it wasn't Northam, right, in Rats in the Walls. He had a name.
Oh, it was? Okay, see that's that's why ignorance is bliss. I was uh-huh. like, oh, it's the same guy.
No, he's taken an alias.
Okay.
Let's say.
All right.
What was his name in the Rats in the Walls?
I don't remember.
People who binge this podcast will be like, oh, it's it. So they're all yelling at me right now.
Yeah.
And good for you. Write in. Tell me what his goddamn name is, because I'm not going to look it up.
I want to say it's like Winslow or something, but it's not that. I don't know. That maybe I'm thinking of Trading Places.
Maybe you're thinking of Delapore.
Delapore. That's not even close
not
to it.
Not even close. Delapore. So, yeah, he's not Delapore. He's Northrop. But let's say he took an alias when he moved into Grayson, which is not really an inn. It's a professional building. That doesn't make any sense
because he wouldn't be like, oh, yeah. No, I mean,
I think it tracks. Like, he wants to, like, rid his memory of the awfulness. So he's trying to, like, cramp this whole business of him reading
still,
bad books.
But he's still a famous Lord Northrop, though.
Northrop Grumman.
Northrop.
Northam.
Northam.
Yeah.
Jeremy Northam.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless this is one of those weird Britishisms where he's actually Northam.
Northam.
It might. Might be. I don't know. British people.
Yeah.
Let us know how to pronounce this word. So, anyway, it doesn't matter because Williams is the 23-year-old dreamer. He shows up and he's trying to, you know, get anything out of him. And then he's like, well, okay, anyway, I got to go shopping because I heard that there's a guy down the street at Clare Market, which is in Camden. Clara Market is selling.
I believe it did say that it was like squalid, if I remember
it
correctly.
Is, like many things in Camden up until like 1979.
Yeah. And of course, you know, Lovecraft had to throw in a, you know, some anti-Semitism here.
Is it? Yeah. Like, it is. Look, he's Jewish. Yes.
Yeah.
You're allowed to be Jewish. People are allowed to be Jewish. Right. It doesn't have to be anti-Semitic.
Yeah. No.
What's the anti-Semitic bit?
Well, first of all, he had to point it out.
He did have to say it.
Yeah. And then he's in the squalid precincts. And then the whole guy's like, I'm evil.
He's a little Ferengi.
Like, yes, you take this book. And you know, it was all, it had an evil.
There's some, I will say, I will happily, obviously.
Am I reading into it? Possibly. But
possibly, because we're all primed for
Lovecraft
it at this point.
Lovecraft has not earned my not reading into it.
True. Which this whole scene, by the way, like plays a lot like it plays in the book, which we talked about, which you have no memory of.
Nope.
But he's like, "Hey, hot diggity! It's a copy of the Necronomicon, and there's only 5 in the world.
Yep. And at a great price.
It's
too.
At a perfect price. Like,
so cheap.
It's like he's trying to get rid of it.
Who?
Why?
I'd be fooled not to buy it.
And this is why I don't think it's particularly anti-Semitic.
Yes, it is. Because the guy's evil and he's trying to, like, get rid of, he's trying to force this upon him.
But he's not trying to, like, sell it at a huge profit. He's not trying to gouge him like the Ferengi do.
How do you know? We don't know how much he bought it for.
But there's only 5 of them. Ever.
Regardless.
Okay.
It's definitely
I think you mean irregardless.
Yes, irregardless.
All right. Anyway, he buys the book.
And I love how by discussing the anti-Semitic racist tropes, we're kind of being, like, I feel like the things I've, anyway, yeah, go
what?
On. No, I'm just saying that, like, I'm, perhaps the stuff I'm reading into it is racist in itself, like, because he doesn't say this, so just the fact that he's, that I'm, I think he's implying stuff.
I think it's fair that when you're reading Lovecraft as closely as we do and talk about it at length, anytime Lovecraft mentions someone's ethnicity or religion or creed or anything, you are ready to, like, what do you have to say about this guy?
Go on.
Howard. Okay? So that's kind of not on us. It's kind of on him.
That's true.
But that said, as I said, I think in, like, the second episode of this podcast, we're not going to spend all our time talking about Lovecraft's racism.
Just some of the time.
And xenophobia.
Yeah.
Just some of the time.
All right.
I might end
on.
Up cutting some of this down, but not all of it.
Yeah, that's fine.
Anyway, he gets the Necronomicon. Now, as we all know, the Necronomicon is written by the mad Arab, Abdul al-Hazred. nothing problematic there.
No. And frankly, I think it sounds like a roller coaster. Like, I feel...
The Mad Arab?
Yes. It sounds like a ride.
It sounds like an awesome ride.
I know.
That should definitely exist in Lovecraft land that we need to get Dolly Parton on board with. We've got to turn around to Lovecraft. And then have her build a theme park in the Ozarks. It would be great. It should be actually be a theme park, like, in New Hampshire or something. Mm-hmm. It would be awesome. Okay. So he gets a hold of this Necronomicon. He's like, "Hey, I know that crazy man who lives next door to me. Maybe he can help." At the Ludus.
Again, why he thought this, I don't know, because this guy won't talk to him about anything.
Well, he's learned,
like,
at this
rumors,
point.
Right?
It's rumors, right? He's learned at this point that this guy is actually educated. He is a lord. He's been around the block. He's been around the world. Maybe he knows something about the Necronomicon. Mm-hmm. So he's like, cool. So he brings the book to his neighbor, Lord Northam, and Lord Northam, like, freaks the fuck out and says, like, no, burn it, and spread the ashes far and wide, which is, of course, Claire's preferred mechanism for destroying immortal things.
What was it, Jason or Freddy Krueger? I can't remember.
It was Jason most recently.
Yeah,
it's like
Jason.
When you kill Jason, you got to put him in, like, separate
Tupperwares. And distribute them all to all points
around
of the
world.
Earth. And, like, you can't just
leave
his body.
Jason.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I drowned him. Okay, I'm just going to leave him there. No, you hack him up into, like, 15 different containers, and then you give them to people, and you say, all right, you're going to take this, and you're going to bury it.
Lord Northam is on board with this plan.
Yeah.
He's like, yes, you want to burn this thing
right.
and spread the ashes as far as you can.
Yeah. Not like just dump the ashes in the ocean, because he'll just
it'll reconstitute or something. Like, and okay, so maybe this is a property of the Necronomicon that it will just, maybe that's why you only need five.
I guess so,
because
yeah.
Like you destroy one, it'll reform itself.
And they didn't have Tupperware back then.
And they didn't have Tupperware. So now there is one mention in this point. I'm trying to like weave in a little bit of the research I did for this. Mm-hmm. He talks about the difficulty in translating it, which is why he goes to Lord Northam. And he says he found the combination of black letter and debased idiom too much for his powers of a linguist, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, black letter, what's that about?
I don't know.
And this is another legal term called black letter
law. Oh, the black letter of the law. Uh-huh. Okay. And I didn't get that it was.
And
like...
it is related to this.
Oh, okay.
And I'll tell you why. So black letter was a more economical font in the 11th through 18th century.
Oh, that's from that. Oh, okay.
And things were written in it, right? Because, and it was kind of a printing press sort of, it was pre and then pre-printing press, and then it got into like the printing press typeface.
Okay.
There's a smaller version for printing presses, but basically black letter is easier to copy and easier to write in than what was before in Latin.
Okay.
And so, first off, that tells me two things. One, it's written in Latin, which, you know, is in the text. Mm-hmm. But two, it's black letter, so it has to be like 11th or 11th century at the very earliest, probably more like 13th or 14th century. So this is going to be a later translation of the Necronomicon. It definitely is not the original written by the mad Arab Abdul al-Hazred. Who would have written it in Arabic?
Right.
Obviously. So we're already like at least one degree away from the true Necronomicon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, then the later translation by John Dee in English is a terrible, corrupted English version.
What I never got with any of this.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I'm sorry, I interrupted
you. Yeah, but go ahead.
No, it's just like when you have a shouldn't only the original book be the bad thing? Like I can.
The magic book?
Yeah, the magic book. All the rest of it should just be like, I don't know.
In the hit role playing game Call of Cthulhu,
yes,
the later translations are definitely worse, and you have like lower mythos scores for them.
Okay,
and you learn less out of them.
Okay, that makes sense.
Some stories, good stories, would have like a very nerdy Call of Cthulhu game would be like, you have gotten a hold of the John Dee translation of the Necronomicon. Go find the original.
Okay,
and then you. Yeah. Travel the world and try to find it, right?
I mean, I can see how, like, a copy of a copy is going to not necessarily... It's like the telephone game.
Yeah.
So you could...
Oh, it wasn't Yog-Sothoth after all. Yeah. It was John Sothoth.
Yog-Hot-Sauce.
That's the Texas version of the Necronomicon, even worse. So it's y'all hot sauce.
I love it. By the way, we need to come up with our own hot sauce.
Called y'all hot sauce?
Y'all hot sauce.
And then just have like a picture of y'all hot sauce on the front. Yes, costs you
in 1D. In a cowboy hat.
In a cowboy hat, and it costs you 1D4 sanity to eat it. So it's like, and also there's no space, like, in most of printing history, there's no spaces between words. It's kind of on you to figure it out. Black letter was like this.
Okay.
And then he talks about like the idiom of Latin, which I'm not super, like, it's not clear what he's talking about there, but sure. and he couldn't translate. All of this is to say, hard to translate, goes to his friend. Friend freaks out and says, scatter to the wind, .. Smash cut.
Wondering how he got here.
Lord Northam is like, all right, let me level with you. Let me tell you why I'm so crazy and I just read romance novels with my cat. He launches into two things. His own heredity. His own heredity, right? That's a word? Ancestry. His own ancestry.
Yeah, let's go with that.
He launches into his own ancestry. He talks about how his line was descended from the Romans.
A lot of us are descended from the Romans. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying.
Once again... just as in Rats in the Walls, because much of Rats in the Walls is lifted from this kind of backstory, Lovecraft incorrectly names the third Augustan Legion as the Legion occupying Britannia. Not true. It was the second.
Wow. Okay.
The third Augustan Legion was stationed in Africa to ensure the flow of grain to Rome, actually.
The flow of spice.
That's right. And so, but anyway, overlooking that part. The Romans were definitely in all across the Isle of Britain, and I believe if this was written in 1926, this is the first mention of the Elder Sign, capital E, Elder Sign, where he says that strange folk
which
met
is
together,
not the,
made the
Elder
Sign.
AARP.
It's not
logo.
AARP. Which, by the way, Claire and I are now proud members of the AARP.
Uh-huh, that's right.
There is actually no age limit. You should definitely join and make good.
Skew their polling.
Uh-huh. So that... That's right. But they offer like good discounts on things like free parking at Hilton properties.
Oh, ladies and
example.
Gentlemen, they're not good discounts. It's like
they're kind of
10% off at Ponderosa.
Yeah.
I don't even know if Ponderosa is still around.
I expect over the course of a year, I can make back that $50 in discounts.
We should try.
Yeah. We got to keep a ledger. It'll drive us mad. So one of his great, great, great ancestors, Gabinius, he
I'm
built
sorry,
this fortress.
I need to interrupt real quickly.
Yeah.
So when Todd said, you don't need to be, you can be at any age and join AARP.
Correct.
He wasn't saying that because we are not of the age to join AARP.
We are not of the age. We're 10
we
years shy, at least.
What are you talking about?
At least. You can be 18 and up. That's what they take.
All right. Anyway, go on. Sorry.
I am 22
I just want to make sure.
Years old.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to tell you the exact date of his birthday.
Yeah. We're recording this a week before my birthday. And when will this come out? We don't know.
We're not recording it a week before your birthday.
A weekish. A colloquial week.
Sure. Todd Beardsley is going to be 50.
Yeah.
In the next 7 days. Yeah. All right, go on.
That is true, and I am looking forward to it.
Because I'm 50.
I had this conversation at work the other day about like telling your boss that you're doing something before you do it.
Yeah.
This is a problem I've always had in my career. my protestation was, but I'm not young and impulsive. I'm old and sure of myself. I don't need to tell anybody what I'm about to do. So, let's see here. Anyway, so when he was a child, he had dreams. Basically, go read Rats in the Walls and you get this next paragraph. But then it turns out, and then he like kind of launches into like, he was searching for something. He doesn't know what, but something beyond the world, right? And
a searcher for strange realms and relationships once familiar, yet lying nowhere in the visible regions of Earth.
Visible regions of the Earth. Right. So he's looking for that special je ne sais quoi, which I don't know what that means in French. but he's looking for that. And he has this feeling that like the world is not the way it seems. It's kind of matrixy.
This is very much like a college student who's discovered weed for the first time, filled with a feeling that our tangible world is only an atom in a fabric vast and ominous, and the unknown demesness. I don't know. I've heard
domains.
That word. Domains.
It's actually
on.
Pronounced domains, as far
oh,
as I can tell.
Okay.
It's like a little bit of a lilt in there.
Oh, okay.
But it's like, yeah, it's right. Domains or something like that.
So anyway, this is definitely like, maybe the color blue that I see isn't the same color blue that you see.
Right. he goes on about this. It turns out this dude who's in this, who is like telling the protagonist to go burn the Necronomicon, he's the one that went to the Nameless City. Yeah. Third connection.
So this guy...
has been around the block. He is a retired adventurer at this point. And this is a fun thing you can do in your Call of Cthulhu
He's
game.
Old Indiana Jones.
Let me go into Call of Cthulhu corner. And it's the CCC. And here's a fun thing you can do. So like, I am a big pushover pansy and I don't murder or drive my PCs insane.
This is true.
We are playing a Call of Cthulhu game. We've played what, like four scenarios now?
Yeah.
Not a
Nobody's
one of
dead.
Them has
yeah.
got died or went insane. Yeah.
I think Todd is afraid that we'll stop
worst.
Doing it. Well,
no, it's not
you're,
that.
You're afraid that we're going to be like, oh.
I no, like I do the classic thing where like I make the monster. And it's like, okay, this monster's kind of tough, but then the PCs just make short work of it because they short circuit something or they like come up with a good idea. I'm like, yeah, that's a great idea. You should do that. Or I come up with like an actually hard monster and
we run away.
They run away, which is totally valid, right? But you don't actually, and like sanity rolls are tricky in Call of Cthulhu. Like you can't bank on the sanity roll actually driving someone insane.
Yeah.
And that's part of the game, right? It's like, it's part of the surprise for me as the keeper to see who lives and who doesn't. Now, that said, if you're a better keeper than me and you actually do drive some of your PCs insane, one of the best things you can do then is bring that PC back as an NPC to spout wisdom or guide the characters or work against the characters as a villain.
Yeah.
Anything like that. Like, just have them in there. And so, and Fantasy Flight games do this pretty well in the board games.
Yeah.
Right? Where, like, you can, like, when you play Eldritch Horror, you know, oftentimes you start a new, your character dies, you start a new character, and then your first order of business is go visit the dead character and get all their stuff.
That's right. That's right.
And there's an encounter involved, and you have to talk to them and all that stuff. So, so yeah, they're pretty good about doing that. Anyway, I would like to do that in our Call of Cthulhu game someday.
If you can murder anybody.
If I can get anyone insane.
Yeah.
If I can somehow freaking manage to drive somebody insane. Next time, I think we have a good chance.
Okay.
The monster's very tough.
Sweet.
Out of the Call of Cthulhu corner. He does mention two figures, two historical figures, in this final paragraph. He talks about Ignatius Donnelly and Charles Fort as people who are part of the whimsy, right, of the world. And I want to talk about them. First off, Claire, are you familiar with either of these names?
No.
Well, let me tell you all about them. So, the one I didn't know is Ignatius Donnelly. Ignatius Donnelly.
I just thought of Ignatius Reilly.
I don't know who that is.
Okay, that's from.
Is it Pride and Prejudice?
No.
Is it Anne of Green Gables?
No, it's neither. None of those. It's a Confederacy of Dunces, maybe.
Oh, I read this book in college. Book all day long.
Pretty much.
No, Ignatius. Now I have Ignatius Reilly in my head. Ignatius Donnelly, he was a U.S. representative from Montana. He was U.S. representative from Montana. He was a Republican. But don't worry, gang, he's a Republican in 1882, means he's a good guy.
Yeah.
Big fan of women's suffrage. It was kind of his thing. But he is not known for his political work. It was short-lived. I mean, he had like a 20-year career or anything.
Yeah.
But he wrote Atlantis, the Antediluvian World.
Okay.
And and he wrote a lot about Atlantis and this field of study of pseudo-history.
Oh, this was nonfiction?
Nonfiction.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
He believed Atlantis was real. And it was swallowed
up. I mean, it wasn't not real.
Plato talked about it, right? It must have been real. And...
I mean, it wasn't real the way we think of it as real.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Oh, so you believe in Atlantis? You, Claire, believe in Atlantis?
I'm saying that
a woman of letters.
Most myths and legends are based on something that comes from something that actually happened.
Well, the Honorable Mr. Donnelly would agree with you. He wrote a lot about it. He was very into cataclysmism. Okay. I'm not super sure how to say it.
I don't know. Disaster porn.
It is this field of anthropology and archaeology that says that there were great civilizations on Earth that were wiped out for reasons that we don't know about. And we remember them as Atlantis or Ragnarok. And in fact, he wrote another book a year later called Ragnarok. The Age of Fire and Gravel.
Wow. Right. So you're telling me that he's got some royalties coming to him from the MCU?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Not MCU. This is all DC stuff. No, wait, you're right. Ragnarok is MCU and Atlantis is DC. Oh, how are they going to do that? All right. Atlantis is Aquaman.
Okay. All right. And worlds collide.
Mm-hmm. So Atlantis and Ragnarok and all that. And so anyway, his whole thing, and I hope this is interesting for listeners, because I feel like I'm nerd-splaining a lot here on this episode, but it's a very short story. So
I'm trying to fill some time.
So basically he had this kind of unifying theory of all these lost civilizations where this event that Western civilization refers to as the Great Flood, that's talked about in the Bible in Genesis, is in fact known to every civilization because it was a big deal and it happened on Earth. It's in Gilgamesh. It's in everything. Everybody has a flood myth, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because there was a huge comet that passed near the Earth in storied history and destroyed all these civilizations and caused like a bunch of turmoil, like floods and earthquakes and all mm-hmm. that jazz. And I really like the notion of this like U.S. representative who's actually a pretty cool guy goes down this rabbit hole of like, but there was this comet. I like that. All right. That's Ignatius Donnelly. Go look him up. And definitely read Atlantis, the Antediluvian World. Like, you should. If you're going to be a Lovecraft completist, this is definitely something that Lovecraft had read. I guarantee it. I don't know it for sure, but I guarantee it.
I'll bet it's so boring.
And it was like, it was published in 1882, so it's like right in the sweet spot of like the kind of stuff that Lovecraft was reading. So Charles Fort, I recognize this right away. Because I had friends and roommates that subscribed to the Fortean Times. And the Fortean Times was a UK-published magazine about strange stuff. This is like down the middle Fox Mulder's territory. It is UFOs, weird shit falling from the sky, strange disappearances, spontaneous human combustion.
Remember when that was like a big thing that we were all talking about?
Mm-hmm. Charles Fort, that's the guy.
Okay.
So he was a big force in this. He wrote The Book of the Damned in 1919. It was published mm-hmm. in 1919. And the thesis of the book, so The Book of the Damned is basically a laundry list of all of these like weird occurrences that science can't explain. Mm-hmm. And if you're like a 14-year-old nerd California hanging out with hippies, For example, you heard all about this. And it was very much a like, the scientific establishment doesn't want you to know that time that frogs rain from the sky. So
I love the idea of like the scientific establishment being like, we can't let people know about this. Like exactly. All they want is for people to like, please, please listen to us about this thing that actually happened.
No, see, in the Fortean view, mm-hmm. The scientific establishment is going out of its way mm-hmm. to discredit, discount, disguise mm-hmm. All of these events that don't comport to their narrow scientific understanding mm-hmm. of the world, so magic is real, mm-hmm. I guess, or whatever, or there are just things that science can't explain, mm-hmm. and the Fortians are the ones that are going to like bring truth mm-hmm. to that. Sure. So they're crackpots, right?
There've been a lot of situations where scientists are like, no, I can't explain this yet. Someday we'll figure it out.
But nobody reads the papers and nobody does the math, right? True. And so, that's because true. Math is hard. Yeah. and if you're not willing to do the math and if you're not willing to read the papers.
And it's more fun interesting to believe that somebody's trying to keep some kind of information from you.
And it's comforting to think that there is a secret cabal of scientists and technocrats who keep the world running so I don't have to.
I guess.
And so it's not just craziness out there. Yeah. It's like there's a design. There's a lot of comfort in conspiracy theory.
I guess I never thought about it that way.
And
that's interesting.
It's a whole thing. And so like Robert Anton Wilson, for example, famous California hippie. He wrote a little thing called the Illuminatus Trilogy. He was involved in the Church of the Subgenius. Big Fortean guy. And so, like, I am very familiar with this.
Okay.
And if you want to know more about science crackpottery, I must recommend to you, go look up Dr. Angela Collier. She's on YouTube, and she has a somewhat famous video called Physics Crackpots, a Theory.
I'm Angela. I have a PhD in physics. I've been working as a physicist for over a decade, and I'm here to tell you what the physics establishment doesn't want you to know. General relativity doesn't work. Quantum mechanics isn't real. Black holes don't exist. CERN is just a big hole in the ground. No one has ever seen a particle. Magnetic monopoles definitely exist, and they power perpetual motion machines for like fast travel, like in WoW, but only wealthy people are allowed to use them. This is a video about crackpots. That's it. That's the intro.
and go check it out. I'll put a link in the show notes. I am currently enamored of this science explainer, the science communicator. She's actually a real physicist. She's not just a communicator. But she's great and she's very funny. And when she gets all like, when she gets all emotional about a particular topic, she has to play video games in order to stop from just going down rabbit holes in her topic. So it makes her stick to the script. It's great. I love her. She's amazing. That's Charles Fort. I think we talked like about Charles Fort for 10 minutes. I don't know. We already talked about The Nameless City. Go read The Nameless City. Lord Northam is the one that left the camel to die.
We didn't mention during the 90s he dabbled in Satanism.
Oh, yeah. Who among us didn't?
It was the 90s.
It was the 90s.
It's a satanic panic for a reason.
Could it be Satan?
Of course, Lovecraft means the 1890s.
What?
But maybe this is a thing that happens in every 90s.
Uh-huh. It could. Maybe it is. It's like every 100 years.
Yeah.
You got to have the satanic, like people are like,
I did write that down specifically. I'm glad you called it out. God, I desperately wanted Satanism to be real. Also, being a person who grew up in the Bay Area, in San Francisco Bay Area, I'm very familiar with the Church of Satan and the schisms therein. What kind of Satanist are you? And I think that's the whole story. I think we did it.
And what story in quotes?
Story fragment. Yeah. Okay, like it didn't go anywhere. No, it ends right there.
And it's I don't put that on Lovecraft. I mean, it's a fragment. He didn't send it out to be published.
It got published by Barrow, who's the executor of the literary estate. He ended up, like I say, he donated all his stuff to Brown, which is great.
I'm very torn on like the, I mean, I guess I won't care after I'm dead. Mm-hmm. But I don't like the idea of somebody going and like publishing all the random shit I wrote, you know, that I did not put out there to be published.
Yeah. Well, and if it was a trick to sell copies of Leaves, it didn't work because Leaves, this is in the second issue of Leaves. I believe there were 3 issues total of Leaves.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, maybe it helps fill pages.
Yeah.
I cannot for the life of me find like a scan or an image. I just wanted like a cover. Like, what does Leaves look like? Because there's only like 2 or 3 issues.
Yeah.
And it's by Barrow. And so it's like 1 degree off of Lovecraft. And it would be nice. Like, I've got like a billion covers of Weird Tales and Amazing Stories and Analog and all that, right? None of this one. So, like, if you, dear listener, come up with one, I implore you, let me know what it looks like, because I can't tell. There's archive sites specifically for pulp magazines, and searching for Leaves is such a terrible name because it's hard, because it matches a lot of things, and so I couldn't find any. I have some business to take care of.
All right, let's get to business.
Let's get down to Bill's Neals. Necronomicon in Providence. It is this August, 15th to 18th. We will be there, come hell or high water. It's a business expense, so we can afford it. Because it comes off of taxes, baby. Necronomicon will be in Providence. I believe we will have a show at Necronomicon one way or the other. I am in talks with venues of how to do this. We have not been invited by the festival.
Oh,
we have not been invited by the conference this time, unlike London Lovecraft Festival. So it's all on me. And I think I have a good venue, actually. It'll be a blast. More to come. Keep an eye on the Mastodon. And whenever we release another podcast, when we talk about things. So more to come. But definitely, if you're not busy, August 15th through 18th, middle of August, which is right over Lovecraft's birthday, come out to Providence. Speaking of coming to Providence, I met a guy on the internet. He lives in Providence, and he runs the H.P. Lovecraft Archive.
Wait, what?
Yeah, all over the internet I met him because I tipped him this one time. So here's the thing. I go to http://. www.hplovecraft.com all of the time. This is where I read most of the stories for this. Okay. They link out to all the Brown archive directly for the scans and stuff like that. They also link out to Shadow Over Usenet, which is a Usenet group. A Usenet discussion thread. Usenet was a 90s thing. It was before TikTok. It's like TikTok, but text and not very fun. But it's what we all did back in the 90s.
In between Satanism and, and listening to Pearl Jam.
Yeah, listening to Pearl Jam and watching for frogs from the sky. It's run by a guy named Donovan Lux, and he lives in Providence. And anyway, he wrote back when I, he wrote back when I gave him like $5 or whatever. And he's like, hey, thank you so much for the tip. And I wrote in the comment section, like, hey, I use this all the time. I feel like I should pay you every once in a while because I use it for my podcast. It's Pod Sotho. Mm-hmm. Go visit us at podsotho.club. And he's like, you know what? I've been meaning to put a podcast section in here. So I'll put yours in a lot because it's criminal that I don't talk about like the HP literary podcast, for example, right? Which is criminal. Like those guys are great. And now it would be greater if they talked about Lovecraft, but they don't anymore because they ran out like 5 years ago.
Right.
They've been going for a while. see, they don't have the trick that I have, and that's rarely released.
That's right. Exactly.
terrible for building audience, but great for longevity. anyway, he's a super nice guy, and we had a little back and forth, and it turns out he lives out there, so we're going to meet him when we're in Necronomicon, and you can meet all of us. We're going to go hang out and talk about Lovecraft nerdetry, but like not
Other stuff.
Or other stuff. Yeah. I don't know what, but Satanism, maybe?
Sweet.
Pearl Jam?
Oh, God, I know nothing of Pearl Jam.
All right. And speaking of tipping, we also...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, this hurts Claire.
This does hurt. You guys do not...
No, shut up. I've put out a tip jar on the internet, and I'll tell you why. I'm telling you, Claire, and also you, audience, this is a real product of a real business called Huge Success LLC. I have to make money on this at some point.
Oh, so it's not
I have
a hobby.
To try to make money.
Okay.
So it counts as a fucking business.
Okay. Okay. All right. That's fair.
So, because I have been deducting some business expenses.
Okay.
For real, because I'm building audience, I'm building brand, all that. Amazon spent 10 years not making money, you know? So, like, we're basically the next Amazon.
Right, yeah.
So you can get on the ground floor by going to bit.ly/podsothoth-support. or just podsothoth.club or whatever. Like, I'll have a link in the show notes, obviously. But I wanted, like, a good bit.ly link. So I grabbed that one. So it's bit.ly. If you don't know how a bit.ly works... I can't help you. It's bit.ly/podsothoth-support. And you can get to directly to our tip jar. You can like, I think it's like, it's all fucking stock stuff. You can donate. You're not donating. You're actually supporting.
That's right.
you're paying. if we make any money at all on this, I swear to you, the only thing I want to do with that money is fund live shows and fund t-shirts and fund stickers and fund magnets and fund mugs. Like, that's the only thing I'll be doing with this money is pouring it back into the very real business that we're running.
We have to keep it in the business?
Oh, sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We should. I mean, like,
that's I didn't know if we could send it to like Fund Texas Choice or whatever, you know.
Sure. Well, I mean, all money is fungible, right?
Yeah, that's true. But all right. I see what
you also definitely donate to fund to Texas Choice, right?
Yeah.
When you're done doing that and donating to every other laudable charity that you can think of, consider dropping a little something in the tip jar. It's just a tip jar. Just think of it that way. And here's the thing. When you pay for something, you tend to enjoy it more. I'm going to just tell you that
right
now. Yeah,
is that how it works?
It's true.
I don't know. I like free stuff.
I also like free stuff, but I pay for like the two maximum fun shows I like, you know, and I feel like more invested in them, like emotionally.
Yeah.
So like if you want to have that feeling, I'm giving you that opportunity.
I will tell you, if you start tipping, we're going to feel more obligated to release more frequently.
Exactly. Oh, go visit our tipping page, Claire, at bit.ly/podsothoth-support.
Which I'm not happy about at all. Every time Todd was like, we should record, I'm like, I don't want to. We're not getting paid for this. Who cares?
Also, who cares? I'm in it for the long game. We don't... If you, by the way, I feel like I am now an expert in how not to run a podcast. I'm very good at not releasing a schedule, not having cutesy little characters that show up every once in a while on the podcast. No interviews, you know, no ads.
I always skip over interviews in podcasts. If I have a podcast where they're like, we're going
to, I listen to Pod Save America. I never listen to the interviews. I just like the yammering.
It's how I was with like late night TV. I just want the monologue and the opening part. I don't want to see them interview Cher or whatever. I've dated myself there.
Jack the animal Dua handler. Lipa. Are you saying Dua Lipa is the new Cher? I think she might be.
Could be. I mean, that's not a bad thing.
Not a bad thing.
Cher's badass.
All right.
Todd did just ask me yesterday, in a fight between... Who was it? Is Cher and who?
Cher and Celine Dion.
Celine Dion would win. I was like, Cher, hands down. Yeah, Cher would kick her ass.
That was a stupid question. So I think that's all the business. Oh, and...
Of course, they're women and not men.
Right.
So they'd probably be like, why are we fighting? This is fucking stupid. Let's just go get a bottle of wine together and have a good time.
Yeah, go watch Sex in the City or whatever women watch these days.
Right, exactly. That's it.
What do women watch these days?
Whatever.
Outlander. Nope. That's like 10 years ago.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm still waiting to see the last episode of True Detective, which I found to be really good.
All right. Well, that's it for The Descent. Nope. The Descendant. Descendant.
Hey, The Descent's actually a pretty decent horror film.
It is.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
No, it's not
It's bad pretty
at all.
Creepy.
Yeah.
And it opens with tragedy. So, you know, I like that.
Yep.
Yeah, so we're going to be in Necronomicon in Providence, August 15th to 18th. Go to our tip jar. I'm not going to say the URL again. Donate. You know what? Don't donate to us. Donate to the H.P. Lovecraft Archive, because that guy is doing a lot of fucking work. It is a great website. If you've never been, you're really missing out, because this is what the World Wide Web looked like in 1995. And it acts like it. And it fucking works. And there's nothing like... jumping out at you. There's no
pop-up ads.
There's nothing there. There's like there's
just here's the link.
There's no there's no like weird UI you have to like inscrutably figure out. It's great. Like, I love it. Very old-timey internet. HBLovecraft.com. And if you like this show, the very best thing you can do is rate and review it. Put some words down. It really helps. Put it in your favorite podcast player. According to our stats, your favorite podcast player is probably Spotify. I would urge you to maybe pick another one, but because they're a little bit scummy. But Apple Podcasts is great too. Don't use Castro anymore. They're a big pile of garbage, turns out. And Overcast, people seem to like. Pocket Cast, people seem to like.
You're just going to keep naming all
of
them?
I'm going to keep naming it. See, like, I have my finger on the pulse of the podcasting industry. I'm so good at podcasting, and yet I make such a terrible podcast. Anyway, that's it. Rate and review. Give us some money, maybe, or whatever. Or don't. I don't really care. And that's it. Next time, what are we going to read? What should we read next time? See, this is another thing you're supposed to do in podcasts, is like do a little teaser for the next episode. But we never do that because it doesn't
tell
matter.
Tell people, write in. Tell us what to read.
What do you want us to read, right, that we haven't covered already? We did take a request. We've taken one request because we've gotten one request.
Give us more requests. They're going to just like...
I tend to shoot for the short ones because they're easier.
At some point, we're going to have to tackle a long one.
We're going to have to hit one of the... Now, like... Thing of the Doorstep was pretty long.
That's true.
Dreams of the Witch House, I think, is the longest one we've done yet.
Yeah.
I'm saving Call of Cthulhu for a special occasion. I don't know, maybe Halloween. I don't know. But yeah, if we haven't covered something, some medium to short story that you would like covered, let us know. I have one in mind. I'm not going to ruin it yet. I'm not going to spoil it yet. I have one in mind for Necronomicon. I'm saving that one. But do write it. Hideous@podsouthup.club or follow us on Mastodon.
And write in and wish Todd a happy birthday.
Wish me a happy birthday. Or don't. Wish me death and misfortune.
Whatever. No, don't do that, because that's going to affect me too.
All right. And that's it. All right. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.